Last case this morning, Grossland versus Barnhart. Pittman.
Good morning, Your Honor. To please the court, my name is Galen Pittman. I think that there are probably three issues in this case. One developed after the appeal was taken. That comes under 28 section 636 B1 or B2. As part of the opposing counsel's reply brief, they bring up the issue that we waived any appeal on this issue because we should have commented on Judge Crabb's commented on the magistrate's opinion prior to being submitted to Judge Crabb. When we looked at this letter that we received, that's not the first one I've received. Received in other cases, Judge Crabb, is that the letter pertains to the actions under B1, and maybe I'm wrong, but in my opinion, this case does not come under B1. It perhaps is more of a B2 case because it doesn't come under any of the 1 through 7 actions that Judge Crabb has allowed the magistrate to handle. And as a result, we did not make any comments in reference to the magistrate's decision. Now, in the past, I've had cases like this, and I've commented on the magistrate's opinion and have simply been dismissed as not having any merit. So, if I'm wrong, then I have waived my appeal on this case. I simply don't feel I'm wrong. I looked at all the cases that were available under the Seventh Circuit and other circuits, and they all pertain to either criminal matters, injunctions, or other matters that fit into the letter that Judge Crabb had submitted. Now turning to the case. This case is a hard Social Security case because it's all retrospective type of evidence, and a case where by the time the claimant files for a benefit, the insured time period has already passed. And so we were looking at that issue in addition that we have to, of course, meet the substantial evidence test. Now, we tried to supply to the court the information about post-polio syndrome and the evidence that we could obtain from our doctors at that time. Subsequent to that time, there has been a post-polio sequel ruling, SSR-03-1P. Now, that clarified the procedure of understanding what post-polio is all about. Unless you understand it, I don't think you can promptly, as administrative judge, even begin to rule on that, because in this case, the administrative judge simply said, she's worked all her life. How can she have polio? Now, the district court tried to overcome that by finding that, yes, she did have post-polio syndrome. But when it came to looking at the medical evidence and the evidence of the claimant, they simply, we think, ignored that. First of all, they say that was sporadic medical treatment within that 5-year period. I counted up the visits. There were 33 medical visits during that period of time. That averages 7 a year. That's simply not sporadic. And with the exception of 2 of them, they all amounted to the complaints that fit under the post-polio syndrome. In addition, the claimant testified about all the things that were happening, about her falls, her fatigue, her dropping items, her headaches, her pain, her lack of energy, her trouble sleeping, her anxiety. All those fit under the qualifications and elements of post-polio syndrome. They're all substantiated. She went to the doctor. She reported the fall. She reported this. The unfortunate part about it, that most of the medical doctors, at least all during the time that she was receiving treatment, none of them diagnosed her correctly and looked at the post-polio for the proper treatment on that. So when you So when you have an administrative judge trying to rule on something, if he doesn't understand what he's what the case is all about, the important issue comes up at the end. Basically, he picks and chooses medical evidence that will fit what he wants it to fit. He ignores her testimony. In fact, he doesn't even rule on the credibility of the claimant, except in the findings he makes one little statement that doesn't even talk about the credibility of the claimant. Now, where does this all tie in? It ties into the end result, because in this type of case, you go through the step the process, is because I don't think she fits into 1111, which is basically a grid pattern for finding a disability. So you got to go to the step four and find if there's any gainful employment that she can perform at any level based upon the medical records, the testimony, and what you have. And so we get down to the last issue. We have a hypothetical presented to the by the administrative judge to a vocational expert. Remember, there are two vocational experts. We had one, Dr. Porter. They had the state's agency. They're basically non-treating physician. They're all retrospect. They didn't take place during the insured period. And therefore, you come down to that hypothetical. Now, he followed that hypothetical with the exception he didn't talk about the comments of polio. He didn't talk about the falls. He didn't talk about the fatigue or any of the things that were set forth in that report. So what the administrative judge simply did is pick the items which he thought would fit into sedentary type of employment. And even when you look at that report, Dr. Coulier checked one of the boxes. He checked the box that she could stand and walk less than 2 hours a day, and then it was crossed out, and then another box checked. Now that tells me, when you look at it, although we don't have any testimony, that even he was concerned about her ability to do gainful employment. Now, if you want to tie in the correct hypothetical that was presented to the vocational people, when they were presented with you that she simply falls, she has had broken ankles, broken feet and wrists, and that she's fatigued, she doesn't have any energy, she doesn't do anything, you tie those all together and you come back with a finding that she is not employable, even as sedentary type of employment. And that's exactly what should have happened in this case. Now, the district court tried to overcome the first issue by simply saying, well, she had post polio, but that's not error. And then they tried to overcome the fact that her credibility, should have commented on the credibility, said that didn't make any difference because it still didn't affect the end result. But it does affect the end result, because if the administrative judge is not thinking what post polio sequel or syndrome is all about, how can he effectively rule on any capabilities that this person has? And so these capabilities were certainly all overlooked by the administrative judge. In this case, it's a hard case because the trial didn't take place until long after the insurability period ended. And in these cases, I know as a matter of fact that, you know, the system just does not like to grant disability in these cases. But this, to me, is an exception to the rule.
Mr. Pittman, let me take you back to the waiver issue a minute. In your reply brief, I think you said that in our case, Grossman received no notice that her failure to object to a magistrate's finding could result in a waiver of appellate review for her case. Is that correct?
No, we received the notice on the standard notice that was attached. Basically, that
it says the failure of a party to object to the magistrate's proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law may constitute a waiver of a party's right to appeal to the United States Court of Appeals.
But it also says, it tells what those activities are. It talks about injunctive relief, judgment of pleading, summary judgment, motions to dismiss or permit maintenance of class actions, motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim upon a release can be granted, motion to dismiss actions involuntary, and application for.
Well, I understand your position that it doesn't cover this particular review of ALJ's thing, but the statement, in our case, Grossman received no notice that her failure to object to the magistrate's finding could result in a waiver of appellate review of her case.
That's incorrect, because she did receive it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Karen San, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. As an initial matter, we respectfully ask that this court find that Ms. Grossland has waived her right to appeal the district court's order affirming the commissioner's final decision. Ms. Grossland, who was represented by an attorney before the district court, failed to file any objections to the magistrate judge's report and recommendation. As her attorney has admitted to this court, she in fact received notice that was attached to the report and recommendation. That notice in a cover letter specifically advised her that she had the right to file objections. Also attached to the report and recommendation was a memorandum which explicitly cited the case of Video Views versus Studio 21 and advised her that failure to file objections could in fact constitute waiver. Nonetheless, she did not file any objections in this case.
What about his argument that this particular kind of case wasn't listed on that order? What's your response to that?
This court has previously compared Social Security cases to motions for summary judgment simply because Ms. Grossland characterized her brief as, quote, a brief in support of petition for review. That's exactly what it was. It was a motion for summary judgment asking the court to enter judgment based on the pleadings and the transcript that was presented to the court. In the Video Views case, this court further found that failure to file objections constituted waiver absent sufficient cause for failing to file the objections, and she simply has not established sufficient cause in this case. Therefore, we'd ask this court to find that Ms. Grossland has waived her right to appeal. Even if this court decides to reach the merits of Ms. Grossland's case, we are confident that this court will find Ms. Grossland's arguments unavailing. Here, as Ms. Grossland's attorney mentioned in her argument, in order to be found eligible for disability insurance benefits, she had to establish that she was disabled on or before December 31st of 1994. Considering this probative period, the administrative law judge found that despite Ms. Grossland's impairments, she retained the ability to perform sedentary work. Substantial evidence supports this finding. It was supported by physician opinions, the objective medical evidence, Ms. Grossland's own statements, her treatment history, as well as her activities. As the administrative law judge noted, state agency doctors agreed that she could perform sedentary work, and in fact, no doctor who treated or examined Ms. Grossland during the relevant period on or before the expiration of her insured status concluded that she had greater limitations in sedentary work. In her argument, Ms. Grossland suggested that the doctors did not understand this post-polio syndrome and did not adequately consider that during the relevant period. However, two of her doctors specifically did consider that diagnosis, but they nonetheless found she didn't have those symptoms. That occurred in June of 1999 as well as in July of 1991. In reaching his finding, the administrative law judge considered the objective medical evidence. He noted, while Ms. Grossland claims that she sought frequent medical attention, the administrative law judge noted otherwise. He explained adequately there were large gaps in her medical history. Moreover, her statements to her doctors did not support her allegations that she was disabled. She made comments such as she only occasionally experienced pain in the areas of her fractures. She said while she had a problem with her right hand, it really wasn't, quote, a major issue. And at one time, while she complained of having problems with her thumb, she said she was otherwise a healthy individual. The administrative law judge also considered her activities, in which she repeatedly admitted to her doctors that she was engaged in some sort of work activity by raising birds or helping the family business, the cement business. She also traveled to England. At one point, she admitted that she had been doing heavy lifting. Given this evidence, the administrative law judge reasonably restricted Ms. Grossland to sedentary work. Based on her vocational history, her sedentary work limitations, the administrative law judge concluded she was not disabled at step 5 of the sequential evaluation. If this court has no further questions, we'd ask that you affirm the district court's judgment.
Thank you, Ms. Sayon. Mr. Pittman? You have 1 minute, Mr.
Thank you. I have 1 minute. Basically, I wanted to respond to those allegations, and I know that it's a factual basis, but facts should be presented to the court accurately. When she testified that she was raising birds, it was just a family bird. She tried to paint with the paintbrush in the business to keep active. She couldn't do it. She dropped the brush. She at one time tried to lift something heavily and sprained her thumb. The other time she testified, she did nothing. She ambled with a cane. She had uneven balance, and all the things that were necessary to keep active, she tried, such as reading and trying to watch television. Those are the things that she was doing. That doesn't make her employable. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pittman. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, And the court will be in recess until tomorrow.